Genealogy by Tim, Season 6, Episode 8, recorded August 30th, 2026. Hello again, I'm Tim of genealogybytim.com. You can email me, tim@genealogybytim.com, and it's time for our monthly rundown of what I've been up to in the genealogy space. First of all, PAGE, that is the Pennsylvania Genealogy event put on by the Genealogical Society of Pennsylvania, was a huge success. And since I've just about finished my PALS application, I'm back to mapping with QGIS. And lastly, work has started up again, and they've been keeping me busy at the Roxborough High School. All that coming up on Genealogy by Tim. PAGE 2026, that is the Pennsylvania Genealogy event, was presented by the Genealogical Society of Pennsylvania. This was a virtual event, took place over Zoom, a four-day marathon, beginning at 10 o'clock a.m. on each day and ending at 7:30 p.m. It featured 32 expert presentations, along with 16 gatherings, sponsor messages, and door prizes, not to mention content videos that will be accessible to PAGE participants through November 10th. And it was my great pleasure to moderate a couple sessions for each of the 4 days. My role in it was actually pretty small. All I really did was start and stop the recordings, occasionally mute participants if there was background noise, and link to presenter videos and handouts in the chat. And also I contributed a little bit to the chat. If I happened to have knowledge on a certain topic that was being asked about, I could chime in the chat with what I knew. My role was pretty small, but I was happy to contribute what I could, just to give the others a little break every now and then. And I also learned a lot about Zoom event moderation. I had never been a host of a Zoom session before, so this is my first time getting my hands on those host tools. And this is good experience for me going forward. I mean, in my full-time job, my teacher job, there are often Zoom PDs that I'm asked to attend. And with this experience, I can say, you know what? I've had experience being the host of a large Zoom event. So it was good to be able to do that for the Genealogical Society of Pennsylvania and its members and attendees. And let me tell you, I was really impressed with the thoughtfulness that went into designing this event. What they did was they gave out links to pre-recorded videos that contained the informative content that the experts wanted to share. And the attendees had a couple weeks to watch videos from the presenters and learn all they could and prepare questions. And at the genealogy event, the expert presenters responded to questions from the attendees. And they had a half hour each to receive questions and give answers. But I thought it was really thoughtful to have the content of the presentation released ahead of time so that the attendees could consume it and then have the full half hour of expert presentation be questions and answers on the material. And there were a lot of good questions being asked. Most expert presenters were able to fill the full half hour slot with good responses to questions. And I thought that was a really clever, really clean way of both presenting the information and then also having a live conversation back and forth with these experts. Also part of the event were 16 gathering sessions, and these were just basically, they'll toss out a topic for conversation and people will have conversations. Sometimes the conversations went in unexpected directions, but always very interesting and always informative. Sponsor messages were also very informative, and these, of course, helped the Genealogical Society of Pennsylvania earn a return on their investment here putting on this event. But some of these sponsor messages were as informative, at least, as the expert presentations that you learn about products that are out there, you learn about how to use them. And, you know, some sponsors gave sort of case studies that were almost like presentations in their own right. And the door prizes were pretty cool. I don't think I won any door prizes, but some of them were really fantastic, like year subscription to one service or another. And these could be valued at tens or sometimes hundreds of dollars. Now, I'm kind of a busy beaver, and I must admit, I did not get to watch the videos before moderating. And I should have done that, just so I could be a little bit more... Actually, let me back up a step. Each session had a moderator who would engage with the expert presenters. I was more of a tech support person who, you know, started, stopped recording the videos, offered technical support, that sort of thing. So I was kind of like a backup moderator. And this was really just the right amount of engagement for me, because I'm kind of a busy beaver, didn't really have time to watch the videos. The primary moderators, they're the ones who really had to watch the videos and have intelligent conversations with the experts. Maybe next time we have a page event, I'll set aside a little more time to watch the videos ahead of time, and maybe I'll actually be a primary moderator. But for this year, 2026, I was quite pleased with, you know, what I was able to contribute to the group. And the videos are available to watch again through November 10th, 2026. So I've still got time to watch these videos. Page isn't over yet, not for me. I've still got lots of videos to watch. And the tech moderation that I was able to do, I had a lot of participants in the chat saying this really was an amazing presentation, and I'm looking forward to the Q&A on this one. I'm thinking specifically of the timeline techniques for urban genealogy. This event was presented by Kimberly F. B. Bucklaw, who is an archivist, historian, and professional genealogist with a master's degree in history from Temple University. When I was tech moderating this Q&A session, a lot of folks said this really was an essential event and one of the most important ones of the 4 days. So I think I'll start with that one. And there were many others also that received rave reviews, and I have until November 10th to watch these videos and learn what I can from them. Ladies and gentlemen, Paige, the Pennsylvania Genealogy event, a resounding success, and kudos to the Page Committee at the Genealogical Society of Pennsylvania for putting this all together for everyone. I'm not quite sure when the next one will be. I don't know if they're annual. They may be every couple years, but as soon as I learn about the next one, so will you. Pal's application is just about complete. All I really need to do is put my digital files on a flash card to save the team at the Genealogical Society of Pennsylvania the effort of scanning all of my 8.5x14 pages, which number 122. I was hoping to submit this application in a binder during the August Genealogy Roundtable, but I missed it. I actually missed 2 monthly meetings in a row. I missed the July meeting because I was out in Lancaster at the time, photographing the pastoral records of Henry B. Schaefer and buying tons of records at the Pennsylvania Music Expo. And then I missed the August roundtable because, well, Page took place, the Pennsylvania genealogy event. That took place on a day that normally would be reserved for the genealogy roundtable. So they moved the genealogy roundtable, and I knew they moved the genealogy roundtable. I thought they postponed it to the following Saturday, August 15th, but they didn't do that. They preponed it to Saturday, August 1st, and I missed it. So I've gone 2 months without going to the genealogy roundtable, although the Page event did kind of satisfy my monthly genealogy yearning. I'm looking forward to the next Genealogy Roundtable, which will take place on Saturday, September 12th. And I will be bringing my PALS application there. That's the Pennsylvania Ancestors Lineage Society application that I've been working on since last summer. And since that's just about complete, I've had to come up with something else to do with myself, genealogy-wise. And I've gone back to the QGIS mapping software. And why have I done that? Because I had so much fun mapping the land of John Hogendobler as it was purchased from the Penn family, William Penn's grandsons, John Penn the Elder and John Penn the Younger, and it was subdivided and devised to five of John Hogendobler's sons, and I had so much fun mapping those subdivisions that I thought maybe I can do this for some other ancestors as well. So I took a look at some ancestors I don't often research. I landed on the Eisenbergers. These are ancestors of my paternal grandmother, Joan Harrison Graham. Her grandmother, Cora Klein Harrison, had parents David Klein and Margaret Eisenberger. Margaret Eisenberger's parents were Samuel S. Eisenberger and Anna Mumma. And if you recall, some years ago, I was feverishly entering Mumma information into my database. That's where the Mummas come from, but the Eisenbergers, I don't have a lot of information on. Samuel Eisenberger's parents were apparently Abraham Eisenberger and Margaret Slough, S-L-O-U-G-H. But the trail runs cold there, and I was wondering if perhaps some land records might help us find our way. So I found a land record of Samuel Eisenberger. When he died in 1884, he left land to his son Henry. And I went back in the records to see, well, where was this land? Can I place that on a map? Can I trace that back to other Eisenbergers? And the answer is no, it didn't trace back to other Eisenbergers. That land came from an unrelated person who purchased it from another unrelated person who purchased it from a brother of John Hogendobler. That would be Joseph Hogendobler, who later moved to Milton, Pennsylvania, and had a family out there. But his land, this Joseph Hogendobler's land, was just a few perches northeast of John Hogendobler's land. And it is drawn out neatly on the draft of Hempfield Manor that I was able to photograph last year, and also shows up on the Pennsylvania Warranty maps. So in addition to the land of John Hogendobler that I researched extensively for my PALS application, there is now the land of his brother, Joseph Hogendobler. Just a few perches to the northeast was sold to a guy who sold it to a guy who sold it to other ancestors of mine, the Eisenbergers. And now I'll have an additional fun puzzle of figuring out what happened to that land. I believe it was subdivided when Joseph Hogendobler sold it. The full tract of Joseph Hogendobler was pretty large, and then by the time Samuel Eisenberger received it, it was pretty small. So I've got some research to do to figure out what all happened there, what land went to who. And in the process of doing this, I thought, heck, why not just hop on QGIS and map out the whole entire Hempfield Manor tract? And that's what I did. And this land is just north of the borough of Columbia, and it stretches from the Susquehanna River at the west to Ironville at the east. And in fact, Ironville is so called because of a large and rich iron deposit that's situate on the eastern edge of Hempfield Manor. And I'm using several resources to digitally map this space. First of all, the Hempfield Manor map, which was drafted by Charles de Craft in about 1789-1790, and I've had the pleasure of handling and photographing the original draft last summer, but the information on there is not entirely complete. Some of the boundary lines on this map are missing their bearings and distances, so I'm supplementing this information with warranty map information and also survey information. Now, surveys were drawn up in the late 1700s. These originals are apparently available to view through FamilySearch.org at any affiliate library. They're not available from home. But copies of these original surveys were made. I believe in the 1930s, these surveys were faithfully redrawn, and those are available directly from the Pennsylvania Archive website, and I'll link to those. I've been using those in conjunction with the warranty maps to fill in information that's missing on the Charles DeCraft draft. And these survey copies are also missing some information. You'll see occasionally a boundary line is identified as obliterated. And what I believe that means is that the original late 1700s survey deteriorated over time, and then by the time they were recopied in the 1930s, not all the information was legible. So I'm looking forward to getting back to the Genealogical Society of Pennsylvania for the roundtable on September 12th. Their office is a Family Search affiliate library, so I'll be able to go in then and compare the original surveys to the copies and see, well, something was described as obliterated. Well, what did it actually look like in the original? Maybe I can read it. I don't know. I doubt it, but it's worth a shot. So these two resources, the surveys, the copies, and the Charles DeCraft draft, complement one another, and I'm able to use both of them to draw the boundary lines in QGIS of about where this land was. Now, if you draw the boundary using the Charles DeCraft draft, you get something slightly different than if you draw the boundaries using primarily the survey information. But you can see where they're both kind of the same, and about where this land was situate on the western border of Lancaster County along the Susquehanna River. Now, one of the most fun and interesting developments during this second round of QGIS research is that I figured out how to superimpose a PNG image, that is, a scanned image or a photographed image. I've learned how to superimpose an image of a map like that onto the digital map, such as an OpenStreetMap or a Google map. And I'm pretty certain that this is how websites such as PhilogeoHistory was able to superimpose various maps and atlases onto a Google map of Philadelphia. So this is something I'm looking greatly forward to showing everybody in mid-September when I get back to the roundtable at the Genealogical Society of Pennsylvania. I've already superimposed the Charles DeCraft draft onto an OpenStreetMap, and I'm going to do the same for the copied survey whenever I find a free moment. And that is an excellent segue to our next segment, which is work has started again, and I've been run ragged lately. So I'm not quite sure when I'll get around to dropping the survey image onto the OpenStreetMap, but when I do, you will hear about it. Okay, folks, I hate to say it, but summer is over, at least it is for me. School started back up again on August 17th with some professional development. Students had their first week back. Last week, they started on the 25th. And the first week is kind of a, you know, welcome back kind of thing. No real content is being offered, but, you know, school norms are being shared and classroom procedures are being established and all that stuff. Content starts next week, so I've got to get a lesson plan going by tonight so I can share it with the teachers and students tomorrow. But I'll tell you, one thing I'm really enjoying about this year at Roxboro High School is my new role as technology coordinator. And basically what I do is I make sure all the students have working Chromebooks, so I'm in the technology office testing out Chromebooks, making sure they work, receiving Chromebooks from students that don't work, adding to databases, sorting through databases, sifting through databases, making sure everybody has what they need. Also, attempting to resolve technological issues. I was treated like a king at the school safety office when I was able to replace their printer. They are now able to print in their office without having to walk across the building to pick up printouts. I don't know if I've ever received such gratitude as a teacher at the school. But those kind of moments really make this new role special for me. And I'll tell you, there was a student on Friday in the special education room, and it was her birthday. She was so excited. Already excited because it was her birthday, but erupted in joy when I brought her her new Chromebook. It was a happy birthday for her. I got a cupcake out of it. So, yeah, there's a lot to like about my role at the school this year. Very busy, but it's all work that I enjoy. I actually spent all day yesterday deploying a scheduling and ticketing system so that there's a formal way for teachers and students to submit help desk tickets to me and also to reserve computer lab time. So all that sort of stuff is keeping me busy. Genealogy research, as it is every September, kind of falls in priority. But there's always something to discover. There's always something to come back here and talk about. I'm not quite sure what it'll be in September, but it's bound to be interesting. All right, folks, that's it for this month. I've been Tim. The website is genealogybytim.com. The email address is tim@genealogybytim.com. As always, keep on digging. Your next family history adventure awaits.